This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So much to get to as we welcome you into this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. The national championship is behind us. Masters teeing off tomorrow, and the countdown continues to the NFL draft, just 15 days away. But no news bigger than the fact that that man is back on your TV screen. Welcome back to your own show, Michael Lombardi. How was vacation?
Vacation was great, Stormy. It was awesome. Mixuma in the Bahamas was tremendous, and it was relaxing, so it was awesome. We were able to keep track of what was going on here in the world. The Final Four, the women's Final Four, outdrawing the men's Final Four in TV ratings. How about that one?
Yep, have not seen that before, so that was pretty remarkable.
Remarkable. And then this is really, I've often told this to the great one, Jim Nance. There was a book when he would go from the Final Four, the Saturday until he presented the green jacket. There is a book in there that people should kind of know what it's like behind the scenes. Like this, the Masters dinner should be filmed. I mean, it's just like you feel like you want to know more about what's going on inside there, the conversations. So to come back this week is a tremendous week because, you know, how hard, even if you don't like golf, you love the Masters.
Yeah, you love the imagery, the tradition, the history, the dinner, to your point, which this year Jon Rahm had a Spanish-inspired setup with all of that cuisine. Really, really fun to see throughout. This, too, Michael, is the second year in a row, though, that we have this show this week where somebody on this program is a loser. And last year it was me with San Diego State getting dogged by UConn. Our boy Elliot Bowman is back. He went to Phoenix. He went to the Final Four to watch those games. And it was great until it wasn't there against UConn in that game. So obviously you were overseas, but like, were you able to watch any of the game actually?
Well, you know, it was a challenge because the home we rented, which was beautiful and it was right on the water, and we saw sharks swimming. Even Bill Berman went and challenged the sharks out there. Tough guy. Anyway, the home was all, you know, a home based on today, where if you had to put, you know, YouTube and all, it didn't have cable. So we had to kind of finagle our way through, which was an issue. But we figured it out, and we got it done. And we were able to watch the Saturday games and the Sunday games, the Monday games, and the women's games. So good. It was great. But I think what I learned about UConn through this is people kept expecting them to kind of become satisfied. And I never felt watching that team play, there was one moment of satisfaction until they hoisted the final trophy. I mean, their will to win, their competitive spirit is unlike anything I think we're going to see for a long time. Because usually winning is a cocktail for complacency. It's a cocktail for comfort. And this team showed none of that. They just, the second half, they just kept coming and coming. And you kind of knew that they were going to wear their opponent down. And, you know, they beat all the odds in double-digit win. I mean, it's remarkable. It really is remarkable.
Yeah, it was a special run, no question about it. Their closest win by 15 points throughout. And I was joking with Elliot before. It's like, okay, how many was that lost by? 15? Crap, San Diego State lost by 17, so I'm the biggest loser of the two of us. But credit him, because he's a lot more positive than I was. He's already looking ahead to the Colts. He's looking forward to Missouri football and Luther Burden. So he's turning the page. He's in a better mindset. Were there any in terms of NFL news, Michael? I know that you were at Relaxation Station, as you should be, but you've always got your pulse on what's going on in the National Football League. Was there any news that did pull your attention while you were away?
You know, the Diggs deal, obviously, right before I left, that happened, which was interesting, you know, and I thought to me that it's a good situation for Diggs. Diggs isn't the same player. Nick ended up removing a couple of the years of the contract. But I think the quarterback conversation, even when I was over in Exuma, you know, talking to people around the league, these quarterbacks in this draft, I don't feel like, in listening to the people that I talk to, Stormy, I don't feel like everybody has the same order for every other team. And we'll get into the column I wrote about the Giants and their love affair for Drake May. But to me, listening to the breakdowns from teams that have worked out the guys, spent time with them, this is a draft where, like most drafts, where we could see five quarterbacks or six in the first round, we might only have one that's really a good player. We might only have one, because everyone has something wrong that they're going to have to overcome, and they're going to have to be in the right system. So when you have time to kind of take a step back and see it all from a different angle without trying to rush and put it in your day, I think this is going to be a really hard draft to break down the quarterbacks. And I don't think it's a draft, Stormy, that anybody has this consensus of the top 50 players. I think your top 50 and another team's top 50 could be completely different.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation to be had, and one that will certainly carry over with our first guest of the day coming up in about 15, 20 minutes or so. Chris Sims, former NFL quarterback, now an analyst over at NBC Sports. He's going to join us, get a bunch of his thoughts on the news in the NFL. Of course, the draft later this hour as well. VSiN managing editor Adam Burke. And then coming up in hour two, Harry Gagnon is going to join us as well. But to stick with that theme of quarterbacks, it seems to be that way, right? Like the collection of guys, Michael, particularly at that position, when we talk about how high they're going to be drafted and how good these guys are going to be, the ceiling is and the sky is the limit, XYZ, all of these things that we love to talk about, these quarterbacks. Very rarely do we see multiple of those guys in the same draft work out. And so it's just a matter of, are you going to be able to land the right one in the right situation?
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem too, Stormy, is they come in with such fanfare. You know, they come in with they're supposed to be the savior. They come in with the idea that it's going to be them and they can handle it. And they get pumped up way too fast. They don't gradually kind of work their way into it. And I think some of the expectations kind of consume the young players, and it's really hard. It's really hard. It's going to take time for all of these players to develop, including Caleb Williams. I mean, Caleb Williams has got a lot of positives to him, but there are concerns about him. This isn't like, okay, we got this. You know, he's unique in his personality, his style, what he wants to do, how he blends with his teammates is going to be an interesting thing to watch and monitor. And I know Chicago's going to pick him, but I know they're worried about a couple things too. This isn't a slam dunk, right? This isn't just, okay, put him in the Pro Bowl tomorrow. You're going to have to do some growing up and do some things with maturity. And in this world that we live in today, with the constant, you know, affection being thrown to the players and being promoted and really becoming bigger than they are, it's sometimes hard to communicate. I think what we heard from Danny Hurley, which I thought was brilliant, was we spend more time recruiting the parents than we do the kid. Because if the parents don't let us coach the kid, we don't want the kid. If the parents are going to blame the coaches for him not playing, we don't want the kid. And I think that's going to be the key component of this NFL draft season.
It's an interesting comparison, especially considering Caleb Williams and how involved his father has been, especially publicly, whereas Caleb hasn't said a whole lot of stuff. His dad certainly has. He now, by the way, up from minus 3,000 a week or so ago to minus 10,000 to be that first overall pick that the Bears hold currently. And okay, let's go to, in addition, as we're waiting for the draft, we still had another deal come through this morning, breaking news a couple hours ago that the Jags re-signed their pass rusher Josh Allen to a five-year $150 million deal. This news comes after there were some frustration rumblings about Allen and the Jags dragging their feet a bit, putting him on the franchise tag, but he ultimately gets a deal done, Michael.
Right. And I think we're going to start to see more of this trickling in. You know, when I was away, I hear the Lawrence deal is moving. I hear the Tua deal is moving. I think you're going to start to see some of these deals come in. And because of the extra cap room, we know that, you know, teams are willing to sign their own players like the Colts did, like Jacksonville was able to do. But I don't think Jacksonville's done spending. I think they're going to get Lawrence done before the year's out. I don't think they're going to let him sit there and wonder what the fifth year is.
Well, I know you wrote a whole column about it's now or never for Trevor Lawrence. He is going into the fifth year of his deal. We'll see what that paperwork ends up looking like in terms of the dollars and cents. But he's a guy that you're not still sold on just yet.
No, I think there's a lot to concern yourself with him too, Stormy, you know, because I think when you look at him and you say, okay, where are we going with this? Like, what do we have? Can he throw the ball up the field? You know, one of the things you want for your quarterback is to throw it down the field and make explosive plays, which Michael Penix kind of does in his tape. But we have not seen that from Trevor Lawrence. He's never averaged over 7.1 yards per attempt in all the three seasons he's played. And they've got to find a way to get that changed.
21 touchdowns, 14 interceptions for Lawrence a year ago. For Josh Allen, with him signing the deal in 17 games, he was second in the league in sacks with a career high and franchise record 17 and a half. He had 33 quarterback hits. His 32 sacks the last three seasons ranked 10th among all players in that time. So he gets paid deservedly so. An interesting wrinkle to this, though, Michael, with him coming off of the franchise tag and getting a deal done, there were nine players that were tagged at this year's franchise tag deadline, eight regular franchise tags, one transition tag. Seven of the nine now have deals. Just T. Higgins and Antoine Winfield Jr. don't. And I heard a rumor as I was driving in here today that Antoine Winfield, they feel the Bucks have optimism that he's going to get a deal done. So is T. Higgins going to be the lone odd man out that doesn't get signed?
Well, I think, look, the receiver market's all over the place, right? I mean, you know, I was talking to an executive this morning about the Stephon Diggs deal at 18 and a half. And he's like, look, that's a cheap deal for a receiver now. I mean, these deals are ridiculously going up and up for receivers. So, you know, T. Higgins deserves to be paid like a number one receiver. He's, to me, even though he's not listed as a one, he is a number one. And so I don't know. That's going to come down to Mike Brown. Does he have the willingness to have two high priced receivers? That takes a lot out of your team. You have to compromise in other areas. But Higgins deserves it if anybody does.
Yeah, and I wonder how that plays out in this offseason in terms of offseason program. Does he hold out at all? Is there still opportunity to move off of him?
Like, oh, yeah.
What do you do there?
You're too smart. You know the answer to that. He's not showing up. We're going to have to, you know, take away the social accounts. I'm never coming in. It's the Jesse Bates thing all over. Yeah, but that check at where he is, you know, he's not giving up that check. Let's be clear.
It's our favorite time of year. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. We're just getting started, though, on the Lombardi line. When we come back, we'll continue all this NFL talk with former quarterback and current analyst over there at NBC, Chris Sims, joining us next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't yet, make sure you drop by and check out the new and improved VSiN.com. All the same great educational content you're used to, but with a fresh new look. You get all of our hosts and experts' best bets, a look at the betting splits, exclusive articles, including a new one that dropped just this morning from our own Michael Lombardi. VSiN.com, your one-stop shop for all of the betting content, filled with masters and draft stuff right now, as well as we welcome you back into the Lombardi line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we'll get into some more of this NFL talk with Chris Sims, who joins us now on the Progressive guest line, former quarterback turned analyst for NBC Sports, co-host of PFT Live with Mike Florio and the Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast. What's going on, Chris? Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, come on. Anytime. Always. Always good to talk some ball with you guys. How are you?
We're great. We're doing great. Let's start off with the concept. I've talked to a lot of teams and watched all of them. There isn't a perfect player at quarterback in this draft. Would you agree with that statement that all of them are going to have to overcome something?
Yeah, I would agree with that, right? But I would say, like, Caleb Williams, in my opinion, is as close as you're going to get to being that perfect as far as quarterbacks. You know, again, Mike, I mean, you know, to me, it was a slam dunk, like it was CJ Stroud as the number one guy last year, or Joe Burrow, and, you know, another year, or the year I had Mahomes, right? I mean, to me, the Caleb Williams stuff, where, yeah, it's not perfect, but damn, there's a whole lot of good, and then there's also some, like, elite and extraordinary. And to me, the only thing you might have to really, that would concern me, that you got to work out of his game, is a little bit of the backyard gunslinger stuff, right? Where, yeah, he'll get out of the pocket and maybe make a crazy throw or try to fit a ball in here. But again, it's five interceptions on the whole year, and three of them were in one game, to where, you know, again, I'm in love with Caleb Williams. I really am. I think he's pretty awesome. I definitely think the other guys have more questions than he does, for sure.
And I'm sure that we all anticipate the Bears will have that same feeling taking them at number one overall. The odds certainly indicate as much. When it comes to like this quarterback class as a whole, though, I feel like, Chris, I'm seeing more mock drafts than not that have six quarterbacks going in the first round, in the top 15 even. Is this going to be another one of these drafts where we see teams really reaching for quarterbacks who shouldn't be first round picks? Or is it going to be something like we saw with Malik Willis and Will Levis, where they ultimately fall to the second and third round, and it's just us on the outside looking in that say, oh, these quarterbacks are for sure going to go early? What do you think?
No, I think it's really going to happen. I do. I'm not going to say six. I'm not going to say that. I do think like either a Penix or a Bo Nix will get left out of the first round, even though I do think both of them are clearly first round talents, right? I think it's different than some of those other names and people you talked about. But like, at least with this crew here, right, they can play the position of quarterback for the most part. Mike alluded to it. They're not perfect, but like in those other years with the Malik Willis, like there was not very much quarterback play to be evaluated at all. There was plays to be evaluated. Ooh, there's a good throw. Ooh, there's a good scramble. But it was never a consistent drive, put a game together, put consecutive games together where you went, ooh, this guy has a chance to be surgical in the NFL. Now, like to your point, though, will guys be overdrafted in this? Like J.J. McCarthy, in our normal thought of a quarterback that should be drafted in the top five, right? No, I don't think J.J. McCarthy fits that mold of top five talent, top five quarterback. But when you couple that with, hey, a team desperate with the need and a guy that, hey, we do think is damn good, and if you're going to take him a few spots earlier than the masses agree with, I'm not going to be mad at that. But yeah, I think we're going to have some overreaching. And I think we'll end up having at least four. Okay. At least four. And I could see five. To me, Drake May, of course, is the one that I don't get. Right. And I'm starting to hear it more and more, and I'm having people comment to me through text as some of the more important people in organizations get a hold of this whole draft. But that's the one, when I hear Drake May at three, my brain wants to explode. I just don't see it that way at all.
And the word on the street, and I wrote about this today for VSiN, Chris, is your hometown team, your dad's team, the Giants, are madly in love with Drake May. They think, and this is all hearsay, obviously, from people in the league, that they think he's got Josh Allen-like traits. And Shane and Daboll both obviously, you know, have lived that dream, and it has worked out. And they found the potential that a lot of people thought was there with Allen. They found it and they developed it.
Yeah, I hear that. You know, I was one of those guys, right? I mean, I love Josh Allen. He was my number one quarterback in that class there. So I saw that, but I could just tell you this. I don't think they're in the same universe as the film is concerned. Josh Allen carried a team and had to do things that were crazy for them to even be in a football game. But here's the difference, too. Josh Allen, you might have had underwhelming plays evaluating him in the draft in that process. But, Mike, you'll remember, it wasn't like, oh, wait, he's inaccurate or he can't make this throw. It's like, wait, why did he try to fit that ball in between seven people and throw it 125 miles per hour? Right? It was more that. I never was like, oh, he doesn't control the ball well. Oh, you know, he doesn't see the field all that well. You know, oh, he leaves the pocket too early. Drake May, there is throws on there and plays on there. One, there's mechanical issues that I'm not sure you can fix. But two, the ball is everywhere, like everywhere. And that's where I have a hard time believing that Giants thing. I don't know what to believe with the Giants, but my big thing with the Giants would be, hey, I know Daniel Jones is not perfect, but he's like problem 74 for that football team and what they got there. And I just can't imagine them taking a quarterback at six. It just doesn't seem like a Giant type of move.
You're probably in your glory when you heard Merrill Hodge say that Drake May will get you fired. You're like, that's what I've been telling everybody.
Well, I got a lot of friends in the NFL. Mike knows that, right? I have gotten a lot of text over the last week of, hey, I saw your rankings. You know, I saw when they came out and I thought, wow, he's got Drake May at six. That seems a little crazy or different. But I've gotten a ton of texts from people over the last 10 days that are like, hey, you know, your Drake May thing, I'm with you. People, number three pick, that's insane. You know, brain blow up emoji, whatever, right? So that's it is a total projection. And, you know, for a lot of these teams that like him and see these traits and, ooh, it could happen the next year or 2 years from now, still, that's not a number three or a number five pick. You don't pick a guy where you go, ooh, I think we're going to make him sit for 3 years and then he'll be ready. That's not a top 10 pick. And that's where I don't see it with Drake May. You turn on the highlight tape, it's good. But when you really start to unpack it, it's very average.
All right. So all your texts of talking to all these teams, receivers, my favorite subject in every single draft. How many teams like neighbors more than Harrison that you've talked to?
Most of them. I mean, again, it's like it's few and far between. I mean, again, that's another one. That was what started my onslaught of comments from, you know, the people, Mike, you know, a lot of them who I talk to and all that. I mean, some teams have a significantly better grade between neighbors and Marvin Harrison. It's not like, ooh, it's close. It's like, no, neighbors is in a little bit of a class of his own compared to Marvin Harrison Jr. I like Marvin Harrison Jr. He's a safe pick, but I know I was blown away. I'm sure you've seen enough, right? Neighbors is phenomenal in every area. I mean, it is elite in almost all areas except for size. And it's not like he's small. He's big enough, certainly. You know, but I, you know, will a team like Arizona and Monty Osinfor, who we know is from New England and maybe likes a big receiver and just wants a for sure safe pick, will they take a Marvin Harrison Jr.? I don't know, but I certainly don't think he's in the class of neighbors.
Marvin Harrison Jr., a minus 500 favorite to be the first non-quarterback off the board. Neighbors available 3-1 if you guys like that out there listening. We've talked a lot about quarterbacks, wide receiver. I feel like the defensive players are not getting a whole lot of love here. Dallas Turner is the favorite to be the first defensive player drafted. Who's your best defensive player on the board?
I think he's up. I mean, he's definitely in that conversation, right? You know, his film will maybe make you want a little bit more, but they're so crazy, athletic, strong, the potential. He's still raw. So he's definitely up there as one of the top defenders in the draft. I love Latu from UCLA. I actually think if you watch his film and Dallas Turner's film, you'd go, ooh, Latu's better. But Dallas Turner has so much potential as a pass rusher. The guy that I love, that I have a man crush on, is Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, who to me is by far the best corner in the draft and the guy that could be your island shut down in your face corner play after play. Incredible ball skills, incredibly explosive, right? He's tough. He's physical. It's a lot like Devin Witherspoon from last year. Maybe not quite the good a tackler, but I think he's a better pure cover corner. He's the guy that I love a lot on the defensive side of the ball.
We have to hit the break, Chris, but how high do you think he could get picked?
I would think Quinyon Mitchell is top 15. Mike, I don't know. You chime in here.
No, I think he's going to go top 10. Top 15. I think he'd go – yeah, I think 15 is the safe play, but he is clearly – yeah, he's clearly has – and look, everybody's looking for a cover corner. Let's be clear.
Yeah, he's special, and he, to me, is the one guy you can go – on an island, cover Jamar Chase, and we're not feeling like we're totally outmatched.
Chris, you're the man. Thank you for joining us as always.
Hey, you guys are the
best. Thanks, Chris.
See ya. Peace out.
Chris Sims, make sure you check out the Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast and PFT Live. Quinyon Mitchell plus 350 to go top 10. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time here at VSiN, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, though. This is a limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits right now. Speaking of VSiN.com, who better to join the program than VSiN managing editor of the website, Adam Burke, joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you here on the Lombardi Line. And speaking of that betting splits page, it seemed like the public was all over UConn on the national championship on Monday, and it worked out for them pretty darn well because UConn continued to just tear through this entire tournament. Adam, what was your reaction to the win?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Zach Edey, 37 points, 10 rebounds. Purdue loses by 15. I mean, I don't know if anybody was going to be able to beat UConn with the way that they had played in this tournament and, frankly, the way that they played in last year's tournament as well. And know, Dan Hurley did a phenomenal job getting this team motivated, not letting them get complacent at all. He found things to complain about throughout the course of the NCAA tournament that kind of brought that team together, kind of gave them that little bit of extra push to, you know, be the first repeat champion that we've had in a long time since Florida in 2006 and 2007. So credit to them. I don't really know what Matt Painter was doing. I don't know why they only shot 7 threes when, yeah, Edie was getting his, but it was pretty clear you needed to do a little bit more than that. But, you know, hey, I mean, UConn, just a historic run of dominance here in these last two NCAA tournaments. And I don't know, I guess we'll see if they can run it back for 3 in a row.
You think they can, Adam? I mean, you know, it's every year's a new year in college basketball. I mean, I think to me, this culture is so impressive. The selflessness that they play with as a team, and you know, they've got great players, but they play kind of. It's almost like the old North Carolina teams. You don't realize how great the players are, like Michael Jordan, until they go somewhere else. You're like, holy shoot, that guy's really good.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I think it's really hard to kind of project that out at this point in time because, college sports free agency now with the transfer portal and NIL and all of that. I mean, I think it'll be difficult for UConn to withstand 2 years consecutive of losses and then try to, you know, run it back and go there for a third time. But you know, as you mentioned, I mean, this is a program that obviously, you know, they're doing a great job of finding players that fit the system. They're doing a great job of navigating a very, very good Big East conference. And, you know, I'm sure they'll be obviously back in the NCAA tournament, but having a similar run. Who knows? I think it's just really hard right now to kind of project out college athletics so far in advance because it's literally the wild, wild west out there. And it's largely a spending spree. You know, who wants to spend more on their talent? Who wants to pay for some of those big time transfers and, you know, pay for the head coaches that they need to get and all of that? So I don't know. We'll see. But I think 2 years straight of pretty significant losses from championship teams could be a little bit too much to overcome.
Yeah, they lost 3 key cogs last year, 2 on their way out this season. Also, a team has not three-peated in the men's tournament since the late 60s, early 70s with John Wooden in UCLA. And it's been a long time since then. UConn currently a co-favorite with Duke right now at 10-1, down from the 12-1 we saw in this market yesterday. But speaking of paying coaches, how much would Kentucky have to pay Dan Hurley to get him to leave? Because UConn, like, is the modern day blue blood now, right? Like, I don't think that Kentucky is a more attractive job than where he's at and what he's already doing. No,
I don't think so. I mean, look, also, you know, this is a Kentucky program that historically has been fantastic. There are very, very high expectations, and certainly there are high expectations at UConn when you win back-to-back titles and have what, 6 in the last 25 years, whatever that number is. But I think Hurley is very happy with where he's at. And I think that, you know, for Kentucky, a program that kind of needed a facelift, they're going to get one here. We'll see who they wind up actually getting to be the head coach. But I think it was one of those situations where Calipari probably needed a change. I think the athletic department needed a change as well. And I think it was kind of just more of a mutual agreement to kind of go their separate ways here. And of course, Calipari, you know, finds a home very quickly there in Arkansas. But, you know, look, when you're a coach who's already established yourself at a program and things are going really, really well, you don't leave it. When you've established yourself and things have kind of fallen off a little bit, that's when maybe it is time to go. And especially if you're still going to be a very sought after candidate like Calipari was.
So let me ask you this. Calipari goes to Arkansas, and we saw Musselman recruit 2 consecutive years, get to the Elite Eight. How much better can Cal make Arkansas than what Mus did?
I mean, that's the, you know, several million dollar question, right? I mean, you know, look, Kentucky, I think it's interesting because Kentucky is a team that, you know, we know them for having all the one and dones. We know them for having all the great freshmen. Calipari's had some teams that have been a little bit, you know, higher on the experience side here within the last few seasons, and they still kind of struggled a little bit. So, look, I mean, I think Eric Musselman's a brilliant basketball mind. I really, truly do. That's not to say that John Calipari isn't, but you know, I think that Musselman kind of takes more of a present day approach to the game. He adopts a lot of NBA principles in terms of shot selection, the types of players that he's looking for, defensive shot selection as well. Whereas I think Calipari has kind of at times tried to just ride on the talent that he has, ride on these kids that are just absurdly talented, but very, very raw. What is he going to do at Arkansas? Will he kind of change his mindset a little bit, or will he stick with the things that have kind of worked to a degree for him, worked for a long time, but maybe don't work as well now in the present day game where the talent pool is kind of dispersed a little bit more with a lot of these guys from low and mid majors transferring into these major college programs after they've established themselves as good college basketball players. So I'm curious to see what Calipari tries to do, you know, personally with building this program. Does he look for these uber talented five-star freshmen and just kind of try to ride that raw talent? Or does he actually build a program and build a roster? That's what I'm kind of curious to see there down in Arkansas.
Yeah, put a lot of players in the NBA, but just 1-4 the last five NCAA tournament games. Arkansas, though, immediately upon that news getting delivered, went from 70-1 to 30-1 in next year's national championship odds. Let's talk, Adam, VSiN.com real quickly, because there's a lot of events obviously coming up here soon. We've got the Masters getting set to begin, UFC 300. It's the final week of the NBA regular season. What are some of the key resources that people should be aware of on the website right now?
Well, I'll start with UFC 300. Lou Finocchiaro already has his preview up over at VSiN.com, and our own Britton Hess, producer of VSiN Primetime, he actually got a press pass this week for UFC 300. So he's down there at the Apex, you know, hearing the interviews, he's going to see the weigh-ins and all of that. He's been writing a column looking at every fight for us over at VSiN.com. That comes out typically Saturday morning on the day of the fight card after the weigh-ins and after everything's kind of settled in a little bit. So you'll have two deep dive previews. The one from Lou is already up. The one from Britton will be going up as we get closer to the fight card here. As far as the Masters goes, we put out our Masters primer last week with our Long Shots crew, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin, and Matt Brown. So we got some content up on that that's been up for a few days now. Wes also doing his official tournament preview here with a look at his favorite plays, a course profile. I know it's Augusta National, but there are a lot of things that you need to know about that golf course. A lot of guys who have a lot of success there on an annual basis. So we got our Long Shots crew taking care of everything. We'll have some nightly updates as well. I know they'll be doing some additional podcasts throughout the course of the week. So definitely hitting the Masters from all angles over at VSiN.com.
What do you make of the new changes in the second hole and then the 15th? They moved the tee box back. How do you think that's going to kind of the start this first nine and then the second nine, where usually someone can catch up because of the short par fives?
Well, I think it'll be really interesting because, you know, we know the course familiarity, guys that typically play well here all the time. You know, guys that know kind of every blade of grass, as they like to say, a player like Tiger Woods. You know, Tiger's never going to be in great form heading into this tournament, but he knows every single inch of that golf course. And course familiarity, course fit are really important here at Augusta National because it is, you know, one of those majors that's played at the same course every single year. That's not the case for any of the other majors. So that is something that definitely helps the players. I certainly understand and appreciate the officials at Augusta National trying to change some things up, make things a little bit more interesting. But at the end of the day, to me, I think the guys that play well here will continue to play well here just because that's kind of the nature of this tournament, the nature of this golf course.
And the top two favorites in Scottie Scheffler and John Rahm, the guys who have won it the last 2 years. Loaded slate today in MLB, Adam. 14 games on the docket, two already underway. But any best bets that you have for the rest of the evening?
Yeah, I got a trio of best bets over at VSiN.com. I'll throw one out here to you. Head over there and check out the other two. But an early game here, at least, you know, sort of early for us on the West Coast, Tampa Bay and the Los Angeles Angels. Zach Littell is a guy that, you know, the Rays are just so incredibly good at player evaluation, whether it's players in other organizations or players in their own. And Zach Littell is a guy who came over last year. He really wasn't much of anything at the MLB level. The Rays turned him into a very competent starting pitcher, and they've made some arsenal changes that I like with him here so far this season, trying to improve his performance against right-handed batters. Typically, we see right-handed pitchers struggle with left-handed batters. Littell's been the opposite. So they've kind of changed his pitch selection a little bit. Faces a very right-handed heavy Angels lineup today. I think it's a good litmus test for him, much like Toronto was, and he pitched well in that game. I like Zach Littell over 4.5 strikeouts here in this Rays and Angels matchup.
You're awesome, Adam. Thank you so much for your time, as always, my friend.
Thanks, Adam.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
Follow him on X at Skating Tripods. And again, catch that full MLB betting preview up on the website today. Two more plays available there. When we come back, let's just continue pumping up the website because, Michael, you have a new column that dropped earlier today talking about what the Giants might do with their quarterback situation. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A monster fight card is taking over Las Vegas for UFC 300 coming up. And at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, they're giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any UFC 300 bet. Download the app and use our promo code VSIN when you sign up. VSIN, DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. And as we were talking about in that last segment, up on VSIN.com right now, Lou Finocchiaro has a full breakdown of each and every fight on the UFC 300 card. So if you're looking for a place to use that promo, VSIN.com is the way to do it. Also on the website right now, Michael, you dropped this morning your latest column. And I love the way that you got this thing started, talking about how anticipating problems is the biggest downfall of any organization. And this entire article is ultimately revolving around the Giants and their current quarterback situation. But you say no team had a bigger issue looking ahead than this team in the New York Football Giants.
Well, they just keep stuck on it. They just keep convincing themselves. And as I write about in the column, faith is a powerful tool spiritually, but sometimes it can be a deterrent in football. You have faith that Daniel Jones is going to come through for you. And there's really been no evidence to have that faith other than you want to be correct. And so when you go back and study Daniel Jones the year they made the playoffs 2 years ago, he was the same Daniel Jones he always was. Didn't throw it down the field, made some plays. He's not a complete bust. The problem is you picked him sixth overall in the draft. And when you pick a player sixth overall in the draft, there's these huge expectations. And there was two ways I could have gone with the column as I was writing it, Stormy, is I could have gone down, all these guys are going to get overdrafted. And when you get overdrafted, it's really bad. But then, you know, I went down, I wanted to kind of make the point about May and how teams often compare players in drafts to players they've had before. And I was told reliably, extremely reliably, that the Giants are love May's potential. And as I write about in the column, potential is another dangerous word because, as Christopher Sims said two blocks ago about the potential, you know, he doesn't see him moving forward. And people that can see the potential and think they can solve it are the ones that are going to hit the home run in this draft. And maybe the Giants will be right. I kind of disagree with Sims a little bit on the fact Josh Allen had accuracy issues coming out of Wyoming. There was no question about that. And everybody was, the people that were down on him were concerned about that. However, he's so big, he's so fast that you forget about sometimes how the ball gets sprayed around.
No, I'm 100% with you there. And the thing that I have kept coming back to when it comes to Drake May, on this show at least, is that his experience is so much fewer than what we've seen from some of these other guys who are coming out in this year's draft, who have been, you know, multi-year starters and are older and are 24, 25 years old. He's had, you know, two full seasons as a starter. His first year as a redshirt freshman was better than this past year. But what is he going to be able to do with his physical tools? And I think that the connection to the Giants makes a ton of sense when you think about Brian Daboll and the last person that he really had a lot of success with developing at the quarterback position being Josh Allen. So all of those ties make a ton of sense, Michael. When it comes to Daniel Jones, like, we have talked about it so much about the Rich Eisen report of buyer's remorse for this team, the amount of money that they paid him instead of paying Saquon. I'm very curious to see what the Giants ultimately do and feel with Daniel Jones. Like, do you genuinely think that they're going to go out and get a quarterback in this draft?
Well, as I write in the article, John Mara basically allowed the shift in narrative, okay, with what he said. And what he said was, if these guys fall in love, then I'm more than willing to listen. And if it requires trading up, I'll do that as well. Then John Mara has the final say, owns the team. So, you know, that's why I went on to talk about how they are falling in love. They know they need to do it. And look, let's go back to the Eisen report. Rich Eisen is not a rumor guy. He got that from somebody really good. And I mean really good. He got that from somebody as reliable as when Sonny was told where they were going to go with Salazzo for dinner with Michael. I mean, that's how reliable that source had to be for Eisen to go ahead and do that. So I think, to me, you know, that's the feeling in the room. I know that's the feeling in the building. whether they think he's healthy. Look, they had Russell Wilson there the first day. They think they're worried about quarterback and you bring Russell Wilson in immediately? Come on. So read that. There's no tea leaves to read. This is their actions are speaking volumes, and it's deciding on who they can get and who they want. And I think May fits them because it kind of goes down that path. They can keep Jones for a year because he's got a huge contract. May's going to need some time to develop, right? And what keeps you in your job more than anything? Development. We're making progress. We're moving in the right direction. Why make a change when we got this thing going so well? And as I wrote about in the column, when you have Belichick and Vrabel sitting out there mm-hmm. and the fan bases are desperate to win, you know, you're going to have to prove that you can get this thing going in the right direction. Not necessarily in the wins, but in the vision.
4-year, $160 million contract for Daniel Jones after having legitimately like only one actually solid season, coming off a torn ACL. He's had neck injury issues. He's had disc issues, 2 touchdowns and 6 interceptions in the time that he played the 5 games last year, ranking 33rd among quarterbacks in QBR at that time, which remember, there's only 32 teams. So that's not a great number to be accompanied by. But so we talk about that quote from John Mara, right? Giants GM has come back, Joe Shane, saying that he said in a conversation with Albert Breer, we don't want to be up here drafting this high again. We don't want to be picking in the top 10. We have multiple needs. We're going into year 3. People assume we're going quarterback, but we have other needs. If the quarterbacks go 1 through 4, then we're getting the second best position player, not quarterback at 6, which is okay too. That player will really help us. So I know we say there's no reading between the lines, but I feel like with this one, we kind of have to. Does that mean that he likes the top four quarterbacks and doesn't want to reach and take Penix or Nix based on your comments about Drake May? Is that the case? Or does this mean that they're not in love and that they're not interested in trading up? Or is this just another lying season quote?
Well, I think he makes a point here. He basically is saying, he's saying that we may have to trade up and get the quarterback.
Okay.
Now, he's trying to say that he doesn't want one. But if you don't want one, why would you bring Russell Wilson in? If you don't want one, why are you flying all over the country? If you don't want one, why are you taking guys out to dinner the night before workout? Like, if you're content with Jones and you're content with what you have, then you're probably doing your homework, but you're not doing it to this extent. And again, it goes back to Mara. They have to convince Mara. Mara's the reason Jones signed. He's the reason there's a love affair for Daniel Jones. And here's what I will say about Daniel Jones. His college tape, Stormy, at Duke was better than some of the guys that are having college tape today. There's no question. He played decent. It's just they got overdrafted. Yeah. And so the expectations are so high. And he's never thrown the ball up the field. He's never averaged over 6.9 yards per attempt. You're not beating anybody with that. You know, you're not beating anybody with that. So is he a bust? No, he's not a bust. But he's not good enough to get the whole thing going with. And I think what Sheen's saying there is simply this. You know, we may have to move up to get a guy, and I think they will.
Michael, did you hear at all while you were gone the Malik Nabers soundbite about if he were to be drafted by the Giants? Because his entire response was just about, well, you know, if they're getting a receiver like me, I know they're going to want to try to work out the quarterback situation and make sure they have somebody that can give me the ball. And I was crying laughing at that statement, Michael.
Well, I think to me it's pretty obvious. The players know, right? I mean, he knows. Saquon Barkley knows. They all know. It's like you can't hide it, right? You can't hide it. The quarterback has to come through for you. And I think ultimately, yeah, that's interesting. Now, you know, I mean, we spent time on the Giants. Let's talk Washington for a second. They're bringing – everybody's surprised they're bringing Jaden Daniels. And why? They're going to bring everybody. And I think they're the team that's the hardest to predict because you know where Adam Peters likes to go in terms of the quarterback. He liked Trey Lance a lot, gave up a lot to get him. He and John Lynch wanted that. And so where do they go? Is it Daniels? Could they go to McCarthy? See, I think there's a lot of people in the league that like McCarthy higher than what the media experts or the draft mockers do. I didn't say he was going to go 2, but I think that he is valued. I think everybody's quarterback order is completely different. And the one thing about McCarthy is against good teams. Now, TCU, he throws 2 pick-sixes, which was a disaster. But last year, and of course, he didn't throw it in the second half against Penn State. But the point here is when he has to make plays on third down, he comes to play. And I don't think we could say, and my point here is, don't judge where these quarterbacks get picked. Wait till they play.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody's order is going to be different.
The draft certainly begins at 2 in 2024. Jaden Daniels, a minus 165 favorite, followed by Drake May, plus 145. McCarthy, plus 350. To go 3, May is the odds-on favorite, minus 135, followed by Daniels, plus 155. And McCarthy, same wheelhouse, plus 330. We're going to hit the break, resetting with hour 2 of the Lombardi Line. When we come back, we know the matchup in Brazil, you guys.